fiduciary and welcome our studio audience and begin with this short agenda, short session with a public hearing on Senate Bill 6. Council?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 6 provides a statutory civil cause of action against a person who wrongfully appropriates money or the property of an elderly person without regards to whether the person is taking appropriate money or property is a fiduciary relationship with the elderly or incapacitated person. It also specifies who can bring the suit on behalf of the elderly person, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. I don't have the sign-up sheet. Is anybody here to testify on Senate Bill 6? Anybody want to talk about Senate Bill 6 before we go into work session? Okay, I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 6. Anybody want to move Senate Bill 6?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Edwards.
I move Senate Bill 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Edwards moves Senate Bill 6 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Yes, Representative Wells.
It's interesting we're taking out the word fiduciary. Fiduciary, I can't even pronounce it.
Fiduciary.
Fiduciary.
Probably because nobody can say it.
Yeah, fiduciary abuse and put in financial abuse. What are we really doing here? What is fiduciary abuse?
Fiduciary is...
They would be there to handle money.
So, yes, that's right.
So what are we doing, just clarifying the language?
I think so.
Is this all this bill does?
My impression, my notion of reading that is that is a cleanup, basically, just to make that more readable.
People.
And then...
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Werbelow.
I just weigh in and say, and I think because of the recent Supreme Court case, because we had the word fiduciary, which means a relationship of trust, like a family member or somebody that you know and trust, that because we had that word in the bill then, that it limited that to those kind of people, and yet a lot of other people commit fraud on the elderly that don't have those kind of relationships, and they wanted to make sure that those people were covered by the bill also.
In fact, if you look on lines 6 and 7 on page 2, I think that's probably the most substantive change beginning up there, I guess, on line 2. When a person wrongfully takes or appropriates money of an elderly or incapacitated person, it says, without regard to whether the person taking or appropriating the money has a fiduciary relationship with the elderly or incapacitated person. So I suppose this then would extend liability to somebody who swindles, who commits fraud, and gets money that way, so that not having a fiduciary relationship doesn't amount to a defense against responsibility for swindling somebody for their money. I think is the gist of the bill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's my understanding. Senate as well.
Well, Mr. Chair, does it have to be the elderly or the incapacitated person who brings the action, or can someone else bring the action?
A fiduciary could bring, a guardian or a conservator could bring an action on behalf of an elderly or incapacitated person as well.
Where does it say that?
Well,
another statute.
Yeah, that would be another statute.
Actually, it's in the bill.
Is it?
Chairman. I think if you look at line 17, page 1, Mr. Chairman, who may bring the action.
Okay, there we are. That's an existing law. There we are.
See that?
By a person who's 65 or more incapacitated, or by a guardian, conservator, or attorney in fact.
Why would you have to be 65 years of age to do this?
Well, this comes under the elderly abuse statute.
The other person?
No.
No, the person bringing the action.
Yeah.
The person who's been wronged.
Thank you. I was just curious if you buy anything.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wells, you don't have to be 65 during the action. It's just the person on behalf of the action that's being brought, the guardian.
The
or
victim.
The person. Yeah, precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also add that people under 65 if they run into this kind of situation, they have other remedies, but just not under the statute. The statute just applies to the elderly.
But my question, there's no provision for siblings or that sort of thing to bring this action on behalf of an elderly or incapacitated person.
If the sibling is a guardian, a conservator, or attorney in fact for the person who has been wronged, why, they certainly can, but it wouldn't be limited. It wouldn't establish the right just by virtue of that relationship. That's correct. Okay, is there anything else? We have a motion before us to move Senate Bill 6 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Aye.
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 Yes.
Excused?
Yes.
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 Yes. Senate Bill 6 moves to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Carrier, is in the background. Do you want this? Okay. It's yours.
No.
We'll open then a public hearing on Senate Bill 397, Council.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Senate Bill 397 specifies the legal arguments that may be made by lay and agency representatives authorized to appear in contested case hearings conducted by state agencies. And as you see from the Senate measure summary, it simply clarifies what constitutes a legal argument in the department's rules, and they make them similar to what's put forth in the Attorney General's model rule.
We are a labor commission chairman this morning, and they have removed any objection they had to the bill in the Senate.
Bowley had objections over there?
They did. They have this morning informed me that they are all right with the bill.
I think it's because they added Bowley.
Yes.
I see. Yeah. Okay, Amy Varan. Got a live witness on this one. So we don't have to figure it out for ourselves. Welcome.
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee, my name is Amy Varamp. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Department of Justice. Senate Bill 397 was introduced at the request of the Department of Justice. This bill would clarify the provisions of the Administrative Procedures Act of the APA with respect to arguments that may be made by non-attorneys in contested case proceedings. Excuse me. Since 1987, the APA has authorized state agencies to be represented at contested case hearings by an officer or an employee of the agency, subject to the consent of the Attorney General. The APA has also authorized private parties to be represented by non-attorney representatives in contested case hearings before certain agencies. These statutes preclude the non-attorney representatives from presenting legal argument, but direct the Attorney General to develop model rules for the proceedings that do not have the effect of precluding lay representation. The Attorney General's model rules define the scope of legal argument that non-attorney representatives may make at contested case hearings. Those rules have been in place since 1987 and have been adopted by a number of state agencies for the conduct of hearings. SB 397 is substantially identical to the Attorney General's model rules in specifying the scope of permitted argument by non-attorneys. The bill was introduced at the request of the department to resolve any questions about the scope of permitted argument under those rules. The bill would not change the practice that's been in use for more than a decade. The remaining provisions of the bill are solely for cleanup.
Okay. Questions, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I find this kind of interesting because we had a bill recently on the floor that allows police officers to do, I think they must have borrowed the language verbatim from your rules that allow police officers in municipal courts to do the same thing. And actually, I voted against it because I really do think that doing some of these things that you discuss here, making arguments relating to application of statutes, are legal arguments. And I said that they were practicing law with them. But it seems like the Attorney General does not agree with me, and at least if he has these provisions in model rules, and now we're going to put them in the statute. But I have some real questions. This is a fine line you've drawn, and I just kind of throw that out there as a concern and what your response is.
Mr. Chair, Representative Law, the line that we've drawn has been one that we think represents the particular, oh, I say, expertise, I suppose, of agencies that are actually administering the particular statutes that they've been charged to implement. Those agencies in their ongoing work with parties that appear before them prior to the contested case are doing just those kind of things that we've identified in the model rule as being things other than legal argument, interpreting the statute, for example, based on its literal interpretation of the terms is something that, as attorneys, we probably would recognize as being the practice of law, but for purposes of this provision of the APA, we felt that it was not something that was legal argument in the sense that this original statutory provision was intended to prohibit. Part of the original reason that this provision was put into the APA in 1987 was to deal with the Attorney General's concerns that agencies would be out there actually practicing law and representing the agency without consulting and working with the Attorney General's office. And under Chapter 180, we felt that that was really a function solely of the Attorney General's office. Therefore, we drew a line that we felt comfortably reflected those things that agencies could do on their own and those things that they needed legal representation from the Attorney General's office to perform.
So rather than expanding the rules, and then this bill actually served to limit what a non-attorney representative can do at a hearing?
The statute prohibits non-attorney representatives from making legal argument, and the Attorney General adopted a model rule back in 87 that crafted this line. This bill would just put that definition of what's not, what is and what is not legal argument into the statute.
Representative Werbelow.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You discussed this in terms of agency people arguing this, but this also extends to a layperson representing someone who has a beef with the agency. And the agency people, I can understand, would have worked with many of these rules and statutes over years and would be just kind of familiar and with them. But we're also bringing other people in there that would not be as familiar. And so I have that concern. Plus, we get down to admissibility of evidence. That's very much a legal argument, what's admissible and what's not and so forth and why. But you say it's been in effect since 1987. No one's been too concerned about it. Has anybody talked to the bar about this?
Mr. Myers here.
Well, Mr. Myers, would you do you have any comments?
Teach you to find judiciary as a place to take a break for the afternoon.
Mr. Chair, it looked like I was going to be able to coast through the afternoon. That's not the case. Carl Myers, on behalf of the Oregon State Bar, we have taken a look at this bill, and in as much as it has been rule and there have not been complaints, we have taken no position. There were some proposed amendments in the Senate side that we very much opposed that would have expanded the layperson's ability to represent others and to offer these kinds of arguments, and those were not successful. So the bill as it has passed through the Senate is acceptable to us.
But this does extend to lay people, not just agency people.
In limited circumstances where lay people have the ability to represent, Mr. Chair, Representative Werbelow, in those there are only a certain number of cases of agencies where lay people can represent others.
If I could just expand on that, there's a list of agencies mm-hmm. in the statute. I believe it's something like 10 or so. And in those cases, it's not any non-attorney that can represent. It's only an officer or certain employees of a corporation that can represent the corporation.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Anybody else wish to testify on Senate Bill 397? If not, we will close the public hearing and open work session.
Chairman.
Representative Witt.
I would move Senate Bill 397 engrossed to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Representative Witt moves Senate Bill 397A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Excuse me.
Is there discussion on the motion? Hearing none, please call the roll.
Representative Backman?
Aye.
Representative Edwards?
Aye.
Representative Wallace?
Representative
Wallace?
No.
Representative Erbelow?
Well, can you put down there reluctantly, yes, since they've been doing this since 1987?
A new category.
Yes.
Representative Williams?
Yes.
Representative Webb?
Yes.
Chair Shanby?
Yes. Senate Bill 397A goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier? Representative Webb? Well, that concludes our agenda. I'd love to keep you all here for another hour, but I can't think how, so we will be adjourned.